Sex is the life force energy that runs through us all. Can you use sexual energy for your spiritual evolution, or perhaps for emotional healing? Is it even possible? Clinical sexologist Dr. Martha Tara Lee will explore all these and more on Eros Evolution on Om Times Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Eros Evolution. This is where sexuality and spirituality meets. My name is Martha. I'm a clinical sexologist with a doctorate in human sexuality, and I'm from Eros Coaching. That's EROScoaching.com. And today we're talking about something really important, really close to my heart, and it is sex addiction. Have you had people who often just say, you're a sex addict, or maybe you've accused people of being a sex addict? What exactly does being a sex addict mean? In today's show, the title is Sex Addiction is Not a Diagnosis. There's no proven support for either sex addiction or hypersexuality, which means people with super high sex drive. These are phony concepts that are used in sex negative ways. This does not mean that people are out of balance or have obsessive compulsive disorder. CBT, or cognitive behavioral therapy, is believed to be the most effective way to deal with imbalances. Sex addict clinics overcharge for a condition that does not exist. Both the DSM, which stands for the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, and ASEC, American Association of Sexuality Educators, Sexuality Counselors, Sexuality Therapists, have soundly rejected both concepts. Unfortunately, American Association of Marriage Family Therapy still supports these harmful concepts. And today with me, we have Roger Labby, Dr. Roger Labby, that is. He is a sexologist and a sex certified sex therapist and a sexual troublemaker. He is a visible leader on the second sexual revolution from 1963 to 1975. He coined the term sex positive in 1976, and he started the National Orgasm Week during spring break in the mid-1970s. That's the first week of spring. He pioneered the pre-sex discussion to emphasize mutual consent in 1993 and has been on the NBC Nightly News, Oprah Winfrey twice, and CNN News Night. Dr. Labby hosted the Pleasure Dome radio show on a rock station in Atlanta for 3 years. He is the author of numerous academic and popular books, including Sex from R to Zipper and The Naked Truth About Sex, both available on Amazon. Dr. Labby gave a TED Talk on the next sexual revolution, and he is the leading person when it comes to the sex-positive enthusiasm revolution, which is already playfully underway, and you can find him at drrogerlabby.com. That's drrogerlabby.com. So welcome to the show, Doctor.
Well, thank you, Martha. I'm really glad to be on your show. I think it's important to deal with this topic.
Definitely. I definitely agree. So explain to us more. You're a pioneer of this work, so I have a lot of respect for you. You've been doing this way longer than me, for more than 40 years now. Mm-hmm. And so tell me about what you know about the history of sex addiction, the term sex addiction.
Well, the term, Martha, was originally created back in the 70s. Dr. Patrick Carnes, who was a psychologist still, and he and his daughter, Stephanie Carnes, are still the kingpins for the sex addiction industry in the United States and elsewhere. It was started, of course, when the economy was turning bad at the end of the 70s, the early 80s, and time was ripe for people to use sex in a negative way for their ends. And so the media caught a hold of it, and it became a convenient excuse for people who are highly sexual to say, oh, I'm an addict, I can't help it, it's not my fault, it's a disease. And none of that is true. Sex addiction doesn't exist, number one. And all these certified sex addiction counselors are paying thousands of dollars to be certified for something, to treat something that doesn't exist. It's a scam. It's a money-making industry that's starting to die because of the publicity they're getting now.
So this is it's important to be able to explain further, because this is quite like a bold statement. So could you explain more, like what do you mean by it doesn't exist?
Yeah. I'm saying there isn't such a thing as people who are out of balance or who are obsessive compulsive about sex or out of control in some way, but it's not an addiction. You cannot be addicted to yourself. Sex is part of ourselves. You know, you can be addicted to a drug or alcohol that's external to the self, but you cannot be addicted to yourself. And strictly speaking, addiction involves a drug or some other substance foreign to the body, which chemically reacts with receptors. This is not true for sex. And there's recent research, neuropsychological research by Dr. Prowse in this country, which shows that none of this is true, that sex is not an addiction. And she's been attacked right and left because she has been bold enough to do the research to prove this. And she was on the Today Show recently, the NBC Today Show and everything. And as a result of this, just to give you a reality check on what is happening, the kingpins of the addiction industry don't want to lose their money, so they're trying to go after her license. They're trying to go after other people's license, and they're trying to hurt people who are criticizing them because they see their industry starting to die. It's like the Titanic, and they're just rearranging the furniture while they go down.
So one of the things that you mentioned is we cannot be addicted to ourselves. However, sex is also something that we engage in activity with others. And there are people who purport, you know, like having skin hunger, this skin-to-skin contact with someone that makes them feel really good. And those releases all these feel-good hormones in our bodies. So do you feel that there's a possibility that people could be compulsive when it comes to acting out their sexual behavior with other people?
Well, I mean, I think people can be exploitive and they can be selfish, but, you know, generally speaking, they can find a way to control this. And if they can't, they need to see a good certified sex therapist, preferably ASEX certified, who can help them with this to get back in balance without shaming them. See, the big problem with sex addiction is that these counselors shame people. They use 12-step programs, which is not therapy. The 12-step program was never therapy, and they're using it as a modality of doing therapy to stop people from masturbating what they say is too much or looking at pornography on the internet too much. What is too much? I mean, people have different levels of sex drive, and the research shows that it's the different levels of sex drive and whether they're highly religious that predicts whether, you know, they have a problem or not. The highly religious people do have a problem with sex, and they tend to see themselves more as sex addicts than people who are not highly religious, for example.
This is so beautiful. I really appreciate everything that you're sharing with us. So explain to listeners more about the 12-step program for those who are not familiar with it.
Can you say that again, Martha?
Do you mind elaborating about the 12-step program for people who are not familiar with it?
The concept program?
The 12-step program.
Which program?
12-step.
You mean the C-step, the Certified Sex Addiction Therapist? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, the 12-step program
12-step.
For alcoholics.
Okay. I've got it. Okay. Yeah. Well, 12-step programs for alcoholics, they use the same program for people they call sexaholics. You have these groups of sexaholics. And what do these people do? They end up hooking up with each other, sitting around talking about their sexual desires. And so 12-step programs do not get at internal locus of control. They do not people take control of their own behavior because they have all this external reinforcement in these groups and by sponsors, none of whom are trained professionals like a sex therapist. And so it's just like with alcohol, they may stay away from pornography for a while until they stop going to the group, but then they go right back to it. And so even with alcohol, I don't think the AA program is the best way to quit. I think the best way to quit is to go to a good psychiatrist and get Anabuse and a few other drugs that will stop you from drinking because you get sick if you drink. But the 12-step program, at its heart, is moralistic. It has a religious base. And it's saying that, you know, this is beyond your control. You can't help. You can't take control of this yourself. None of that is true. Plenty of people take control of, you know, real addictions or with being obsessive compulsive about sex without going to these programs where it's more long lasting because they're developing their own strength to deal with whatever their problem is.
So beautiful. So what you're trying to say is that we can learn how to overcome any kind of behavior that is not serving us through psychiatrists, true psychologists, true sex therapists.
Right, right. And I'm a cognitive behavioral therapist, so I think it's the quickest way to change thoughts so you can change behavior. And it really works with people who are out of balance with sex.
So can you explain more about CBT and what that is about?
Yeah, cognitive behavioral therapy is, I think we're going to have to get into it after our break here, and I'll explain.
Yeah. Yes. So we'll explain more about CBT after this break. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hi, I'm Kelly Fox, host and astrologer of The Astrology Show. Each week, I'll give you access to the current transits, which are a valuable tool that provide astrological information to help unlock the potential each of us has. Understanding the stars can help steer us in the right direction to make better informed choices. So if you're wondering what's going to happen in your week ahead, be sure to tune in to The Astrology Show for guidance, Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Every 2 minutes, an American is sexually assaulted. The majority of victims know their attacker. It could be your friend, your neighbor, or someone you met at a party. If you said no, it's rape, and it's a crime. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Call the National Sexual Assault Hotline today at 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Eros Evolution. This is where we always explore the link between sex and spirit. And today we are focusing on sex addiction. And there are lots of people who throw around this term sex addiction, the media being one of them. And so it's really important for us to get educated and informed about what exactly sex addiction is. And what we've shared so far on today's show is that there's no proven support, I mean scientific support, of whether sex addiction or hypersexuality really exists. And what my guest, Dr. Roger Labby, who is a sexologist and ASEX certified sex therapist and sexual troublemaker, is saying today is that we are much better off getting support in the form of sex therapists and in this approach called CBT. So I'm with Dr. Roger Labby, and that's drrogerlabby.com. So, Doctor, could you explain a little bit more about CBT? We will be beginning to go into it just before the break.
Sure, sure. Cognitive behavioral therapy has been around for quite a few years, and the original it was originally developed in part as rational emotive psychotherapy by one of my mentors, who was Albert Ellis, and then it was later modified by several other people. Dr. David Burns is one of them. And I use Dr. David Burns' book, The Feeling Good Handbook, in my therapy. It's an excellent book because it includes mood logs where you get you write your negative thoughts the way you think them, like you're quoting your brain, and then you put down one of 10 or a couple of 10 kinds of disturbed thinking, like mind reading, fortune telling, blaming, to explain or show that why you have this thought. And then it's easier to get rid of it. And then you replace that thought with a more rational, positive thought. And so by writing out your thoughts, it's easier to get in touch with what they are than just reading a book. And then it's also easier to change those thoughts. So the thoughts are the key, Martha. Basically, we have to change our thoughts if we're going to change our emotions and our behavior. And that applies to any behavior, not just sex, but certainly to sex as well.
Okay, beautiful. So I'm doing my master's in counseling right now, and actually with Monash University, and their specialization is CBT. So I really love the way you are able to articulate this. And so the link between our thoughts with our emotions, the way we feel, and with the way we behave, the way we act. So thoughts, actions, and behavior. And so what you're saying is that we're much better off learning how to self-regulate, self-manage, rather than continue engaging in behaviors that are probably exploitative or selfish.
Yes, yes, that's the whole point. We need self-regulation. Otherwise, I mean, we have to have self-regulation. Otherwise, if you're out in real life interacting with people, there's nobody else there to say, now you do this, or to control your behavior. You have to control your own, and you do it by controlling your thoughts. And so the whole cognitive behavioral approach is not moralistic like sex addiction, which is shaming people. The cognitive behavioral approach has been shown empirically to be extremely effective at changing thoughts and behavior, and also to affect emotions. And so one of the quickest ways and the most empirically proven ways to help people get back in balance in their lives, and that's not just with sex, with anything.
Yeah. So I very much agree with you. I just want to make it clear to listeners that empirical means scientific, and there has been many studies to show that actually CBT's cognitive behavioral therapy works not just for Dr. Labby is mentioning, which is a sexual compulsive behavior, but also many other forms of distress, anxiety, depression. And it's really learning how to regulate, manage yourself, and control your thoughts, because our thoughts is actually fundamentally what drives our behavior. And it's the same as self-discipline. There are some people who are able to manage their moods, and there are people who have no discipline whatsoever. And it's by training and using that muscle that is within us, that mental muscle, that we really start to get a hold of ourselves, so that we can actually function in high-stress situations. And this is what exactly we're talking about when it comes to CBT. So is there anything else you'd like to elaborate on, Doctor?
Is there what now?
Is there anything else you that I'm missing out on CBT?
Well, yeah, I just want to add that cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, is extremely popular. And now there's, of course, different variations of it. People are talking about mindfulness and all this other stuff, and that's all fine. It's just that the basic cognitive behavioral therapy really works, and it works quickly. So if somebody wants short-term therapy, like to increase their self-esteem or affect depression or anxiety, it is an excellent modality of treatment.
Beautiful. So how about those people who require medication when it comes to their behaviors? Basically, their thoughts are triggering this action. So fundamentally, it's the thoughts, the anxiety, the self-loathe or self-hate or self-harm behavior that is driving that. So you mentioned just now that psychiatrists prescribe medication. So would you say medication would be useful when it comes to people who are anxious.
Yeah, that's a complicated question, and it's not. There's not an easy answer. I do believe in medications in some case, and I do believe in psychiatry. It's just that, you know, worldwide, and certainly in the United States, we live in an over-medicated society, and I don't think that that's wise to over-medicate. On the other hand, some of the more modern medications and a few of the old ones are good in conjunction with, like, CBT to help people with depression, anxiety, and other problems that they have with mental health. So it's not that I disagree with all antidepressants, for example. I don't. I just disagree with those that affect people sexually and zonk them out so that they can't be as depressed, but they can't be joyful either, like the SSRIs, serotonin uptake inhibitors, are a perfect example. Those drugs are not good for us. And they're not good for sex. And general practicing doctors throw them like water at people because they know they're going to help with depression or anxiety. But what about the side effects? People are going to be depressed if they can't be sexual, for example.
Yeah. But right? What about the long-term effects?
Well, it depends on the drugs, of course. I'm not a psychiatrist, but I do know that there's some evidence, certainly in my practice and also in a psychiatrist practice that I work with, that long-term use, for example, of the serotonin uptake inhibitors, which is like Zoloft and, you know, Effexor and all those, appears that it not only has a long half-life, that it takes a long time to wean yourself from the effect of these drugs, and you can't just stop them cold turkey, but there is some evidence now. And certainly my experience is that there can be long-term or even permanent side effects from these drugs on your sexual drive, on desire. And so that's a really serious issue. I think the same thing may be true of too much use of estrogen and progesterone in birth control long-term, that it not only lowers desire while you're on the hormones, but it could have effects that are much more long-lasting, and there's not enough research on this to say definitively.
So for those people who are not sex educators and sexologists like ourselves, who are really, you know, positive when it comes to sex, it's hard for some people to understand the importance of sex. So would you mind elaborating a little bit, like, so what? So what if we don't have a sex drive? Why does it matter?
Well, I think it matters because you can't have real intimacy in relationships without sex. Sex is the main conduit for intimacy and love. And so if you have a person that has no sex drive and the partner may have a sex drive and there's constant frustration, that's not good for a relationship. And many of those relationships end. And I think they end prematurely in many cases because they didn't seek out help from a qualified person like a sex therapist working in conjunction with an endocrinologist to figure it out, another doctor, a good urologist or gynecologist or whatever. But that's what we need. The team approach, Martha, is the best way to solve these problems, is to work with a qualified physician who has some expertise in sexual medicine along with a certified sex therapist. That's the best way to solve these problems.
Beautiful. So, you know, I'm in complete agreement with you when it comes to this. And I understand that listeners may not be aware what does DSM or what does ASECT have to say about sex addiction. So would you mind elaborating a little bit more? DSM in the first place?
Sure. I'd be glad to. The DSM is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that therapists like myself use to diagnose problems. And so their diagnoses are used, and the ICD is another one that's now becoming very popular in medical circles. Those diagnoses are used by insurance companies as to whether they're going to reimburse for therapy. And so it's important that you have a diagnosis that you can put down where your clients can get some reimbursement, either as a provider or a network with insurance companies. And the other problem is that if we don't have a diagnosis for a problem, how can we claim we're treating a problem because it's not been proven to be a legitimate diagnosis? And that is true of sex addiction and hypersexuality. Neither of those concepts have been approved as diagnoses by either the DSM or the ICD. And so that is a serious nail in the coffin of sex addiction. And they're still trying to get these concepts in new editions of both the DSM and the ICD. But the reason that they're not in now is because there's not sufficient research to support their inclusion. And there was a big political battle within DSM about this. And to some extent, there is a political aspect. It's not just the research, it's how you deal with the research. But the DSM so far has not included these concepts. And now the question, of course, the sex addiction people think, oh, well, the next time they will push for it. And that's what they're doing with the ICD now. They're pushing for it as a working document to include these. But you have to look at the motivation of these sex addiction people. Their motivation is money. That's why they're fighting to get the diagnoses included. And so I recently made a statement on the working document for the new ICD-11 about that, where I said that. And that will help. It'll help keep these concepts out because they should not be there. There's no evidence that they're valid concepts for diagnoses. Now, with ASECT, ASECT wrote a statement, and I'm going to read part of it because I don't want to misinterpret or misrepresent ASECT. It said the statement follows that that sex addiction does not, the ACE does not find sufficient empirical evidence to support the classification of sex addiction or porn addiction as a mental health disorder. That's a strong statement. And it does not find the sexual addiction training and treatment methods and educational pedagogies to be adequately informed by accurate human sexuality knowledge. Therefore, it is the position of ASECT that linking problems related to sexual urges, thoughts, or behaviors to a porn sexual addiction process cannot be advanced by ASECT as a standard of practice for sexuality education, delivery, counseling, or therapy. I mean, that is a real nail in the coffin along with the DSM of sex addiction.
Yeah. Great. So there's a lot we can unpack from that, so we'll talk more about this after the break.
Okay.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hi, this is Julie Geigel.
And I'm Susan Schuler.
And I'm Lori Walker.
And we are
the Psychic Angel Channelers
from Angel Talk Tuesday.
Tune in every week at 10 a.m. Eastern on OmTimesRadio.com.
The angels have heard your call and are here to help.
Are you ready to receive?
Bathe in the beautiful vibrational frequency to help you heal, expand, and remember your magnificence with Angel Talk Tuesday.
What's up? This is Brad and Mike from Linkin Park for Lifebeat, the music industry fights AIDS. Listen up, times are tough and you get a lot of things thrown your way. If you're being pressured to have sex and you're not ready, then say no. If you're having sex, be smart and use protection. Respect yourself and protect yourself.
For more information, call the National AIDS Hotline at 1-800-342-AIDS or log on to www.lifebeat.org.
And you're listening to Eros Evolution on the Om Times Radio Network, and you can share this show with your friends by going to the link omtimes.com/mobile. With this link, you'll be able to listen to every single show without needing listen to it live without needing to download any app. So I was going to say that you can Google Eros Evolution at a glance, and you'll be able to see every single one of my episodes without needing to download anything. So you can very quickly look at every single episode that I've had over the last 2 years. And so today we're talking about sex addiction is not a diagnosis, and I'm with the very seasoned and very, very good Dr. Roger Labby, and he's a sexologist, a sex certified sex therapist, and a sexual troublemaker. And you can see why, because he's very articulate about and informed about the topic of sex addiction. And just before break, we were explaining about the DSM guide and what that means when it comes to sexual issues. Because with this manual, if you can get your dysfunction or issue into this manual, then insurance companies will pay for it. And if insurance companies will pay for it, that's big money when it comes to the world of therapy. And also, just before break, Dr. Labby was reading out the ASEX statement when it comes to sex addiction. So both of us are members of ASEX, and both of us are of the opinion that it is good and positive to express our sexuality, and sexual frequency is different for different people depending on who they are and their backgrounds and their body constitution. However, we do not feel that expressing our sexuality is something wrong and something that we should be ashamed of and something that we should be medicated about, unless you have anxiety. And that is a complicated issue, like Dr. Labby already mentioned. And so he's advocating a CBT, and he's also suggesting a team approach, which everything that I'm in full agreement with. So Dr. Labby, you have anything else you'd like to add to my little summary?
Yes, I do, Martha. Dr. David Lay is a very important author in the area of sex addiction. He wrote the famous book, The Myth of Sex Addiction, which is available widely, and he wrote a new book on porn as well. And he said this, he said, and I'm quoting him, "The word addiction implies that we know the cause and treatment for sexual-related problems. Unfortunately, the people who struggle with these behaviors are a heterogeneous group and with a wide variety of causes of this problem. Using the word addiction is a distraction from identifying the real issues, where sexual problems are just a symptom. We don't diagnose sneezing addiction. Instead, good medicine figured out whether it's caused by an allergy, dust, virus, or bacteria, because proper treatment varies based on this. We must do the same with sexual issues." And I couldn't agree more. It's really true. Mm-hmm. People with sex addiction, quote, it's not that they have a sex addiction. They have some other problem that's making them act out. They have a problem perhaps in their personality, in their upbringing. They may have been sexually abused. They had some kind of sexual trauma. But it's not a sex addiction. It's not, we're treating the symptom instead of the problem. And that's just not logical.
And that's so important for us to get this in. So I'm making this big pause. It's so important.
Yeah.
It's really important to understand that. So, okay, let's talk about, elaborate a little bit more about obsessive compulsive disorder. So these are people who have personality issues. And so we start saying, okay, these people don't have sex addiction then. There's no problem with being addicted to yourself. So then we talk about being able to express yourself. But then there's a minority of the population who do have OCD, and these people are obsessive, maybe with cleanliness, with this and that. So these people are more likely to be compulsive about something, including with sex. So would you say that people who can't control themselves are OCD, and therefore they need to be medicated?
Well, I don't think it necessarily means they need to be medicated, but they need to be treated with cognitive behavioral therapy. And in some cases, if it's an extreme case, they may need some medication. But you have to be careful where you get the medication. I mean, even psychiatrists are not all equally good at dealing with these problems.
Right, yeah.
I mean, a lot of them just throw a lot of pills at people and over-medicate them without giving them any therapy. And I don't think that's why.
Yeah.
A good psychiatrist knows how to do some therapy, too. And some of the more modern medications are, and they're not as well known, and they are more expensive, but they are often without the side effects sexually that the earlier medications have. And so I think you know, never go to a general practitioner if you have a serious problem with this to get, drugs for depression or whatever. Go to a good psychiatrist and go to one that has a good record and good evaluations, reviews, because that's really important.
Yes. So I like to emphasize that what you just said, which is that not all therapists or doctors are the same. And it's so important that we do our own research and we ask questions around their reputation and their track record and their body of work and their training and the years in practice, so that we really get the best therapist that we can for ourselves. And sometimes maybe everything checks out on paper, but then we also need to have a rapport with our therapist so that we feel comfortable working with this person and that we trust that we are in good hands. And each step of the way, we know what
exactly
is happening, so that we don't give away our lives and our health to somebody else, but still remain very much aware of what is happening. So,
yes.
I appreciate your patience with. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say the issue of finding a good psychiatrist is not an easy one. You really have to do some research because from my experience, most psychiatrists just throw pills at people. They barely talk to them, and that is not good medicine. You see what I'm saying? And so you have to really check and find somebody who has a personality. They can connect with you and not moralize or just dismiss you quickly.
Yeah. So could you, I know you're not a psychiatrist, however, you have a lot of experience in this field, and you would probably be able to say something to every topic that I have. So how do you know when someone has OCD? Because we may know someone with OCD, we ourselves may have OCD and we don't even know it. So how do you know if someone is out of balance or has OCD?
Well, it's not an easy one to diagnose. I mean, there are inventories, but it really just takes a very seasoned therapist to diagnose it, usually a clinical psychologist or a good psychiatrist, because it's kind of like figuring out who's bipolar. The average therapist just doesn't have the background to make that diagnosis. It would take a good psychiatrist or clinical psychologist.
Okay. So in our synopsis for today's show, you mentioned that American Association of Family Marriage Therapy still supports these harmful concepts. So basically, they recognize sex addiction, and I suppose that there are therapists that joins their association would still be carrying out these harmful treatments and making people feel really bad about themselves, thinking through that maybe the 12-step program.
Right. The American Association of Marriage and Family Counseling is totally remiss in not making a statement about sex addiction. Instead of criticizing the concept, which doesn't have any real good support, they've been supporting it by having major speakers in their major conferences, both in regional and national conferences, even recently. And I just am appalled at that. The lack of using evidence-based, empirical-based information to write a statement. And so what happens is AMFT, unlike ASEC, is now being looked at suspect by a lot of therapists, including marriage counselors, for not taking a sense of leadership and direction in this area of sex addiction. It's appalling to me that the American Association of Marriage and Family Counselors has not been responsible at all about this.
Yeah. So I really appreciate you sharing with us, because it's so important for people on the street, for men on the street, to become educated, because they're not therapists and they're not in this field, so they don't have access to the kind of information and training and knowledge and journals that we do. And so it's so important for people to start being educated that actually in the world of therapists, there's still a lot of conflict, and there are lots of people who are advocating the use of empirical evidence and data to show that there are treatments or non-treatments for such things. And it's so important that we stop using terms like sex addiction to make other people feel bad. and to make ourselves feel bad.
Yeah. Yes, yes. You know,
so
I
this
think
is such
when
a
our
big
professional
topic.
Organization, yeah, when our professional organizations, you know, fail us, it fails our society. I mean, I know a lot of marriage counselors who are really fed up with their organization because they're not taking a logical, rational approach to dealing with controversy of any kind. They're just kind of just, you know, zoned out about it all. And to give legitimacy to a concept that has no legitimacy illegitimizes the organization itself, in this case, AMFG.
Yes. Oh, this is such a this is such a big topic. So we talked about sex addiction. It would be really good to talk about more positive things. So I'm very interested because
yes,
in this show we always explore the link. Yes, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you completely. I have offered you know, information about sexual enthusiasm. Certainly, people who are highly sexual can be normal, healthy sexual enthusiasts, not addicts. And so I in my humor book, The Sex from Awe to Zipper, which is a glossary of cartoons, I talked about an enthusiast in a very positive way. It's like a sex buff who adventurously prioritizes sex above work and boring routines in their lives. And whether they're monogamous or not, it's not the issue. It's, do they prioritize making love? Is it an important part of their relationship? And in our society, we don't prioritize it enough. What do? We wait till late at night and we're tired out or whatever. And so we don't have as much of a sex life as we should have as a society. Webster, in his dictionary, contended that an enthusiast is ardently attached to a cause, object, or pursuit. And he claimed that enthusiasm is a belief in special revelations of the Holy Spirit and a strong excitement of feeling something inspiring zeal and fervor. I don't think he had orgasms in mind when he wrote this, but he may have been writing from a rare erotic fantasy. Who knows?
Yeah. So it's really important to check out your books. Like I've read The Naked Truth About Sex, and it's really good. And Dr. Roger Labby has two books, Sex from R to Zipper, which he just mentioned, and The Naked Truth About Sex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm writing a new book too, but that's not out. I'm just starting it. It's going to be on the three.
Oh, what is it going to be?
The one in the 20s. You know, when is it going to be? I mean, the new revolution is starting now, but the first revolution was in the 1920s with the flappers and the bohemians. The second revolution, as we indicated in another show we did, was from 1963 to 75. And the new one is starting now, just as our break starts.
Great. So more with Dr. Labby after this break.
The best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, your conscious lifestyle on steroids. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Join me, Tammy Adams, intuitive life coach and spiritual healer, for my new show, Karma Talk. Learn how to get rid of your karma so that you can start living the life you are meant to live. I am not going to tell you what you want to hear, but what you need to hear. Join me on Wednesday at 12 p.m. Eastern Time for Karma Talk on Om Time Radio.
It's on us to stop sexual assault.
To get in the way before it happens.
To get a friend home safe.
And to not blame the victim.
It's on us.
To look out for each other.
To not look the other way.
It's on us to stand up.
To step in.
to take responsibility.
It's on us, all of us,
to stop sexual assault.
Learn how and take the pledge at itsonus.org.
And welcome back to the last 15 minutes of today's show. I'm with Dr. Roger Labby. He's a sexologist, a certified sex therapist, and a sexual troublemaker. And today we've been talking about sex addiction is not a diagnosis, and we've explained why. We've explained it's not in the DSM guide. We explained that ASEC doesn't support it. And we explained what we feel is useful to people who are in distress, and we mentioned CBT. We also talked about what OCD means and how people who feel that they're out of balance can get support. And it's really important that you seek out the right therapist for yourself and get educated about what is happening in the world of sex, because without the accurate knowledge and information, we just don't really know what we are doing to ourselves. So important to take responsibilities for ourselves. And so we've explored a lot about sex addiction, and I want to talk about things that are a little bit more positive. So so doctor, you are one of the leaders when it comes to the second sexual revolution, and now you're talking about the sex positive enthusiasm revolution, and you have this TED Talk on that. So how is the response that you received from your TED Talk, from people who are hearing your message about the next sexual revolution?
Well, I've had a great response from my TED Talk. People worldwide have seen it. And, you know, there's a lot of enthusiasm about a new sexual revolution. And when I gave the talk, it was with 1,200 college students and their professors. They were all just with me completely. They recognized the need for something positive. Look at the political climate, at least worldwide, really. The swing to the right is there, not just the United States with Trump. And, I think that the new revolution is going to occur in part as a rebellion against this new rigid way of thinking that it does not recognize democracy or making your own choices. And in the case of sex, we all need to make our own sexual choices. I did a book called Sexual Choices years ago, as a university textbook for sexuality classes, and that was my premise, that we need to make our own choices and to make them responsibly. And of course, taking an approach like sex addiction doesn't help people make responsible choices. There are people who have tried to develop other ways of dealing with this besides CBT, and one of them is Douglas Braun Harvey and Michael Vigorito have developed, at least for men, a concept of out-of-control behavior, and they have a new book about this. But we've got to take an approach that's positive, logical, responsible, and I think that has some sense of humor. You know, there's no humor to the sex addiction people, whereas somebody who's into sexual enthusiasm and sexual revolutions tends to have more humor and to be more playful.
So in this show, we always explore the link between sex and spirit. So I'm very interested because we've talked a lot about pretty heavy academic stuff, and also this very serious topic of sex addiction. So what do you feel is the link between sex and spirit for you?
To keep the spirit? Well, I think, having a spiritual approach, it doesn't necessarily mean a rigid religious approach, but having some spiritual connection enhances intimacy. And so I think that the spiritual is, there's nothing wrong with being spiritual. It can make a person more balanced and whole. And most therapists don't deal much with that. But I mean, I think there's no reason not to if it seems appropriate.
Beautiful. Okay, so I really appreciate you coming on to today's show. Like, you have a lot of experience, and you've been on the NBC Nightly News, Oprah Winfrey, the CNN News Night, and you're highly experienced. I'm really glad that I was able to get you to talk about this topic the way, and also the way you articulated it is so much so good, you know, like I don't know like anybody else who is so confident to talk about this topic. So anyway, so I want to find out more, like for listeners out there who like to engage with you, like how do they engage with you? Like, are you available via Skype? How do they hire you?
Oh, well, I do work over the internet. Skype or VC is a little more protected. I do work with people around the world, and I just take a credit card on my cell phone and I do it, because in many cases people don't have anybody locally that they can go to who's qualified, and so I do that. I also have two offices in the Seattle area. Both of them are on water, because I think water makes people feel more peaceful, and so they can work through their problems a lot easier. So I work full time. I write books. I speak. I just got back a few months ago from doing a little humorous routine in Austin, Texas, for the Southwest Sexual Health Alliance, which is another group that is strongly taking a rational approach to dealing with sex and sex education and issues like sex addiction. Heather McPherson and Dylan Davies are the two that started that. I also want to mention that there are some exceptions to the AMFT people. Some of the people who are marriage counselors have taken on their own organization, and one of them is Jay Blevins, who's a sex therapist and a marriage counselor in Madison, Wisconsin. And he did a statement with a bunch of us helping him, which was published in one of the marriage counseling publications, which showed they have some awareness. They need to look at this more than just saying sex is a good thing.
Mhm. Whoa. Yes, that's great. That's great to know that there are people who are within the organization of AAMFT speaking up, and that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, this work continues.
I hope they do take a more rational approach. I think they're under severe pressure to do so by their own members, not just people like me who are not a member. You see what I mean?
Yeah. So the work continues, the dialogue continues, and the advocacy does not end. And it's really important for people out there to be informed so that they are in the know and they can start being more educated when it comes to using terms like sex addiction, because it is not a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And with that, I'm really grateful for you to be on this show today. And so I just want to do a quick shout out. Earlier in March, the first week of March, there was the National Orgasm Week that you started, and I released a series of videos around orgasm, and so people can find it by just doing a quick search, National Orgasm Week, Eros Coaching, you'll be able to find those videos. And also Dr. Roger Labby's website, drrogerlabby.com. You'll find that he has made some videos relating to sex addiction. So if you like to, besides listening to this show or sharing this show with your friends, you can actually go to his website and see some of the resources that he's already put out.
Yeah. And, yes, I have several blogs on sex addiction. Yeah,
and you also have I can't remember. Do you have this e-newsletter thing that people can sign up for as well?
A newsletter?
Yeah.
What did you say, Martha? No, I don't have a newsletter.
Yeah, do you have a newsletter?
I have a regular blog. No, I have a regular blog on my website, but not a newsletter. I used to do a newsletter years ago when I started the National Organization of Sexual Enthusiasts, NOES, which no longer exists. It was too hard to do it alone. But I put out a newsletter years ago, but not recently.
I see. Okay, so please go to his website.
I don't think there's anything wrong with being a sexual troublemaker. I think we need more people who are. I mean, David Lay has a new book out that's called Ethical Porn for Dicks, A Man's Guide to Responsible Viewing Pleasure. It's an excellent book. And Dr. Marty Klein also has an excellent new book on pornography. I mean, there are others besides me that are working on all this. I'm just one. And we all kind of talk a lot, though. We're part, kind of a part of the same group, and that helps us take on the sex addiction people in a more logical, organized manner.
That's great. That's great that you have your colleagues and you feel supported.
Yeah.
And that's so important when it comes to our work. So May is also Masturbation Month. And I'm putting out a lot of videos relating to orgasm and masturbation. And the best way is actually to subscribe to my YouTube channel, because that's where I'm releasing daily videos, small little short ones relating to all the topics when it comes to sex, but for this month specifically, masturbation, orgasm, pleasure. And so you can check it out on YouTube. That's Dr. Martha Lee as well. So next week I have a different guest, and my guest is actually in the UK, and she is a sex and intimacy coach. Her name is Laurie Betts-Bay, and she's a speaker, educator, and author. She works with polyamorous couples as well. And we're going to be talking about rituals, and it's so important to tackle this topic. So thanks for listening in to today's show, and I hope you enjoyed it, and please share it with your friends. It's such an important topic. And thanks again to Dr. Roger Labby. I'm really, really grateful. So
well,
have fun.
Martha, thank you for having me. I think you did a great job.
Thank you so much. And so, listeners,
thank you, Martha.
stay tuned next week. Bye.
Thank you.